This episode of Weekly Spooky is brought to you by Babysitter Massacre, Daddy's Little Killer, available on paperback and ebook on Amazon.com. A good babysitter is hard to find, especially when they're all dead. Larkin's first night with the Babysitter's Club has her filling in for a friend that's blowing off work for a hot date. The simple little lie will have dire consequences that trigger a series of unthinkable events and spurs a killer's need for revenge. With the bodies and suspects stacking up, can Larkin unmask the Kohler slasher? Or will she become another victim of Daddy's Little Killer? From the twisted mind of Weekly Spooky writer David O'Hanlon comes the first book in the Babysitter Massacre franchise series created by me. So check it out right now. Babysitter Massacre, Daddy's Little Killer, available now on ebook or paperback at Amazon.com.
What's that? You want to be scared? Come with me. You will experience tales of horror, ghosts, and death. It is not recommended for the weak at heart. Listeners in the dark. It's more fun that way. This is Weekly Spooky.
Hello, my friends. I am Henrik Kuto, your host and narrator, bringing you another piece of Spooky on the Weekly. And I hope everybody is having a very good week. I sure am. And we have a special story for you. So I just want to mention real quick. Make sure to subscribe, make sure to send us an email at weeklyspooky@gmail.com, and head over to weeklyspooky.com where you can find all the information. You can find our Facebook, you can find our Twitter, you can contact us, you can maybe send us a tip, or even join our Patreon. Very much appreciated. It helps us keep the show going, as well as checking out our sponsors, which this week we are sponsored by, as you heard at the beginning of the show, Babysitter Massacre, Daddy's Little Killer. And the reason I'm extending that plug is because this week's story is by the writer of that book, David O'Hanlon. And it's a good one, my friends, because this one made me emotional. It's got a lot of heart on top of the bloody, violent, disturbing mayhem that you've come to expect, and that makes podcasting great. So we're going to listen to this one together, and I hope you enjoy it. And if you do enjoy it, please check out David O'Hanlon's book, Babysitter Massacre, Daddy's Little Killer, which is a book produced and published by me, but written by David, at Amazon.com on ebook or paperback. I know, plug Central USA, but here we go, my friends. This is a story that's a little bit of a different take on what happens when what you wish for isn't really what you want. So enjoy this one, and afterward I'll be here to chat with you a little bit more and talk about the background of the story. But for now, let's listen. Careful What You Wish by David O'Hanlon. Penn reached for the doorbell. His finger hovered over the button as it had the last two times he tried to bring himself to ring. He sighed and jabbed the button. Ed's face pressed against the glass of the nearest window. Penn chuckled at the sight of the freckled, buck-toothed face, smiling excitedly at him. The door opened, and Penn was greeted by a far less enthusiastic individual. Penn shifted uncomfortably. He didn't look like an ex-con in his new jeans and custom polo shirt, but he felt the same way he did every time he was pulled in for a police lineup. Ed's mother, Janet, held an obese, chocolate-point Siamese cat against her chest and stroked it like a movie villain while she eyed the man on her doorstep. Janet slipped her robe up over her shoulder and raised an eyebrow. "You're Ed's friend?" Penn shifted the brown paper bag into his left hand and extended the right. "Yes, ma'am. I'm Penn." "And you've been in a few, too, would be my guess." She waved him inside. "You're gonna let the other cats out." Penn stepped inside and glanced around the restored brownstone. Three tabbies lounged on the furniture. A Maine Coon lifted its head from the arm of the recliner to survey a new arrival to its domain. The cat was seemingly unimpressed by Penn and went back to sleep. Penn turned to Janet. Ed had told him his mom used to be a famous model, but the horrible marriage and subsequent vodka and Valium-based diet hid the fact now. Janet looked like she would be bumming smokes outside a 7-Eleven. Penn felt a tinge of guilt. He knew better than anyone not to judge a person by their circumstances. She dumped the Siamese onto the love seat and straightened her pajamas before pulling her robe closed and tying the belt tightly around her slender waist. "Don't you think it's weird hanging out with a 10-year-old boy?" Janet snapped the elastic from her bun and let her brown hair fall as she walked past him and into the kitchen. She grabbed a glass from the dish strainer and banged it onto the countertop. "You're like 30 after all." Penn shrugged. "So are you. Thanks for rubbing salt in that wound." Janet poured orange juice into a glass and reached for the Popov bottle atop the fridge. "You can have something to drink if you like. Lactose-free milk, sugar-free Kool-Aid, caffeine-free tea. We even have that shitty soda that lacks all of the above. I've got a water bottle in the truck, but thanks." "Cut the shit, Penn." Janet sipped from the bottle before pouring a splash into the juice. "The boy's allergic to everything. No one hangs out with him because they want to. The last date I had was 4 years ago, and Ed broke out in hives because of the guy's cologne. He has to wear a dust mask to walk through the living room because of the cat hair. The inhaler, the EpiPen, anxiety meds, and Allegra for sinuses. Seizures at the movies, motion sickness at the fair, panic attacks at the mall. There's nothing you can do with him. Ed shouldn't even go to the park, or wherever it is that he spends his time. What do you really want with him?" Ed sneezed around the corner. Penn wasn't sure where the boy was, but knew he was within earshot. Janet's eyes flicked toward the noise and back to Penn. Calling her son a loser clearly wasn't outside of the norm. Penn's fist tightened, crumpling the paper sack noisily. "Health-wise, there's a lot of things wrong with Ed. Everyone else sees those conditions as things that make him weak. I see them as the reasons he's got such a big goddamn heart." Penn stepped closer to Janet and took the glass from the counter before she could drink it. "They're Ed's conditions. But you're right. They do interfere with your life. You have to take the extra precautions, and I bet that's exhausting." "Don't you patronize me." "I'm not. Honestly, I can't imagine what you've had to sacrifice to protect him, but that doesn't change the fact that Ed doesn't get to be a kid." Penn chugged the screwdriver and scowled at the aftertaste. He cleared his throat. "What I want is to take him for the weekend so he can experience a sleepover, watch cheesy horror flicks, play too many video games, and eat a fuck ton of red and green gummy worms with his friend the way regular kids get to. And you can go to the spa, or the mall, or on a date, or at least to a liquor store for some better vodka. You're one ballsy son of a bitch." Janet huffed and put her hands on her hips. "Thank you for noticing, but let's keep this professional." Janet's face slipped into a smile for a brief moment. Then the serious, judgmental glare returned. "You want to know what's in it for me?" Penn shrugged. "Ed's the only person that's ever seen anything good in me. I want to return the favor. I want to give him the experiences he should be having. And as an extra bonus, I'm giving you the weekend off." "He's got school Monday." Janet took the glass from Penn and jabbed the rim into his chest. "You have him home by 7, Sunday night, or you'll be the one with medical conditions."
"Woohoo!"
Ed shouted excitedly from around the corner. Ed climbed into the unmarked moving truck and clicked his seatbelt. Penn handed him the brown paper bag. "I don't think your mom likes me," he said. "To be fair, Mom doesn't get enough guests to know how to like people at all." Ed uncurled the lip of the bag. "What's this?" "A present, obviously." "Presents don't usually come in brown grocery bags, Penn." Ed giggled and pulled out a black polo shirt. "Hey, it's like yours." "It's exactly like mine," Penn said as he tapped his own embroidered pocket. Ed found the chest pocket was identical and featured a stitched moving truck in green thread and gold letters surrounded it. Ed and Penn Moving Services. Ed reached into the bag once more and pulled out a lunchbox. He opened it and found a bag of gummy worms, a sandwich, 2 juice boxes, and a protein bar. Ed smiled sadly. "What's wrong?" "I'm too weak to help you move things." "People have little things to move." Penn tussled Ed's shaggy hair. "Besides, you don't get stronger by not trying. I used to be scrawny." "Really?" "Really. And look at me now." Pen flexed, straining the sleeve of his shirt. How do you think I got this strong? Because you had nothing to do but work out when you were in prison? Ed answered, chipperly. That's entirely true, and also not my point. Ed pursed his lips. Even if you can't help with the physical part all the time, I'm going to need someone to help me with all the business stuff. They don't teach bookkeeping in the joint, and you have to help me paint the truck. Ed sat up quickly. Any color? Of course. Ready for our first job? Penn held out his fist. Ed bumped knuckles against Penn's hand. Absolutely, partner. Crumbs rolled down Ed's shirt and joined the others in his lap while Penn lugged the mattress up the loading ramp and into the back of the truck. Penn was right, and the couple had lots of little things for Ed to load. Still, he felt bad leaving the heaviest stuff for his friend. He shoved the rest of the sandwich into his mouth. Is there more? He asked between bites. Yeah, but not much. Penn pointed to one wall of the truck. Think you can move those boxes over in front of the dresser? There's a big curio cabinet and two footlockers that I think would be more stable there. Sure thing. Dahlia patted Penn's shoulder as he hopped out of the truck and rested her hands on the bumper. You're a good helper. Thanks, Ed said. You have a lot of cool old stuff. Dahlia laughed. Oh, love, this isn't ours. My grandfather was a bit of an adventurer once upon a time. That's so cool. Ed scooped up a box and set it on top of the dresser. So, this is all his treasures? Some of it. After my grandmother passed away, Papa Harp became a hermit and most of it just stayed here, collecting dust. My daddy used to tell me all his stories. I'm sad to say I never got to meet the man myself. That does kind of suck. Kind of. Dahlia tugged at a violet braid and twisted it around her fingers. Not knowing him means I get to hold on to the hope that some of the magic in those stories might actually be real. Oh, magic is very real, Ed smiled knowingly. Where is all this going? I'm sending it all over to a colleague. They're going to sort it out and sell it for me. Why not keep it? Dahlia laughed sweetly. Oh, I'd love to, but there's just too much of it. The hubby and I are moving to New York. We found us a cute little townhouse, the operative word being little. That's too bad. Ed lifted an ornate bottle from one of the boxes. This stuff is really nifty. I'd love to hear the stories about each one. Maybe you will, love. I've got a book deal with a big publisher up north. I'm going to write all about Papa Harp and his adventures. I can't wait to read them. I'll send a signed copy to you and your dad, Dahlia said with a smile. Oh, Penn's not my dad, he's just my best friend. Ed's face soured. By default. Dahlia cocked her head. How's that? He's my only friend, so I guess he has to be the best one. Ed stared at the bottle in his tiny hands. Well, now you've got two, Ed. Dahlia smiled at him. I gotta pack up a couple more boxes that I think would fit perfectly right where you're working. I'll be back in a tick. Ed leaned on the dresser and turned the bottle in his hands, carefully. Raised figures around the vessel were carved from the green glass itself. Ed stepped toward the back of the truck and viewed it in the sun. Nifty! He gasped as the glass changed to brilliant red in the direct sunlight. Figures bound to one another formed an unending chain near the base of the bottle above a silver cap cut to resemble flames that engulfed them. A cutout figure towered over them with a staff in his hand, and the neck of the bottle was shrouded in a silver sleeve with intricate engravings of stars over the man. On the opposite side of the bottle was another figure, bound by a giant snake with a hood over his head. He turned the bottle upside and felt the weight shift, then held it up to light to discover it was empty. He shook it again, feeling the invisible contents bouncing about. No freaking way! He rubbed his thumb over the constricting body of the serpent and tucked the bottle away in its box as he heard the dolly bounce off the front porch. This is so cool! It took another 40 minutes to load the rest of the things and say goodbye to Dahlia and her husband. She got Penn's mailing address to send the book like she said and tipped both of them in cash for their hard work. They were cruising down the back roads to avoid the rush hour traffic. Ed turned up the radio and bobbed in his seat to Iggy Pop's Butt Town. Penn laughed at the boy and threw up his horns before headbanging along with the music. Ed exploded with laughter. Neither of them was aware of the happenings in the back of the truck. They couldn't hear the glass snake's body fissuring or the tiny pieces falling away from the hooded figure, now free of its reptilian restraints. They couldn't smell the acrid, semi-sweet fumes spilling over the lip of the bottle as the building's smoke forced the cork up. Penn checked the time on the dashboard clock and grunted. "What's wrong?" Ed asked. "I was hoping we'd have all this dropped off before dark so we could go to the park and get those hot dogs you like so much for dinner. If I'd helped more, we might have been done faster." "Don't do that. It's not your fault. It's our first gig. We'll get faster." He shrugged. "Besides, there's a place nearby that has these huge conies with every topping imaginable." "Like?" "They've got one called the Gut Buster where the dog is inside onion rings in a cheese-toasted bun and drowned in chili." "Sweet. I think I'll have two of those." They both laughed. "Can we go to the mall?" Ed rubbed Dahlia's $20 tip between his fingers. "Sure. We can do whatever you want, kid." He squeezed Ed's shoulder reassuringly. "But I thought you didn't like the mall." "I'll take an extra anxiety pill." Ed hung his head. "I want to find Mom a perfume I'm not allergic to." Something thumped in the back of the truck. "Shit." Penn slapped the steering wheel. "I forgot to strap the mattress down." Penn pulled over and unbuckled. Ed's eyes grew wide as he realized the source. "Don't go, Penn. It's not much further." "It'll only take a second, kid." Penn winked and stepped out, skirting the side of the truck in case of passing cars. Ed clambered out of the truck and watched as Penn rolled the door up. Penn sniffed the air and fanned his hand in front of his face. "Why does it smell like a fucking opium den?" he asked no one in particular. The ornate bottle clattered along the metal floor of the truck and rolled off the end. Penn caught it before he could hit the ground. He sighed and held it up for Ed to see. "The mattress must have knocked over a box, probably some old-timey cologne that stinks," he said. "How many years have I been captive?" A set of glowing eyes shined in the darkness. Penn knelt next to Ed. "I thought magic had to have a battery." "What do you think you're holding?" Ed whispered. "What is the price of my emancipation, master?" The thing in the back of the truck's voice was a rumbling hiss like steam through rusted pipes. "What is owed of Babak?" "Master?" Penn looked at the bottle quizzically and snickered. "Is that what I think it is?" "Yes and no," Ed gulped. The speaker came forward, his body adorned in a silk cloak with strands of gold that shimmered in the setting sun. Wrinkled hands curled at the ends of the flowing sleeves before reaching up and pulling the hood away from his face. A sweeping gray mustache covered his entire lip and swept out in grandiose curls. "Do you free me without obligation?" Babak asked.
"You're a fucking genie!" Penn exclaimed.
"An ifrit," Ed corrected.
"The master is learned," Babak said. "Speak quickly. I have been gone too long."
"Not until you grant us three wishes, though."
"The law of Suleiman binds me to one." Babak held up a single finger. "I am free of my glass prison, and now bound only by the hesitation of the master's words."
"I've seen enough horror movies to know how this turns out. I wish you were back in the bottle," Penn said.
"It was the boy who set me free. He must make the wish."
"Wish him back in the bottle, kid. It's not worth the risk."
I wish I wasn't a burden," Ed blurted.
"Fuck!"
Penn waved his hands in the air.
"Nope, that doesn't count. He's just a kid. He doesn't know what he's saying."
Babak twisted one side of his mustache and grinned menacingly.
"It is done."
Ed doubled over with a screech and collapsed to the gravel shoulder. Penn dropped to his knees and hugged him close. Ed's fever was growing fast enough that Penn could feel the heat rising off him.
"What the fuck did you do to him?"
"He will be a burden no longer," Babak shrugged.
The infrit burst into flames and flashed overhead, streaking upward and flying above the city like a comet. Penn lifted Ed and hurriedly put him in the cab of the truck, shut the back, and climbed behind the wheel.
"Don't worry, Ed." Penn pulled onto the road in a wide U-turn across traffic. "I'm going to get you to the hospital, and then I'm going to beat the shit out of that genie."
"Ifrit," Ed said weakly.
The hospitals can't help me. Hospitals can fix anything, Pen lied. The Ifrit were created from the first flame in the universe. How do you know this shit? I read a lot. You should be reading Dr. Seuss or something, not... I don't know, Pen waved his hands. Not whatever the hell you're reading. Dad didn't leave me any of those. He left me books on magic. I thought you said your dad was some scumbag talent agent. He left because he wasn't my real dad. Mom had too much to drink and told me it was my fault, too.
No, that doesn't make it your fault. Your real dad is probably much cooler than that guy who was just a chicken shit, but not the point right now.
Pen shook his head. If not the hospital, then what do I do to save you? Get Babak back into the bottle.
Easy enough.
Pen grabbed his phone out of the console and pulled up the internet app. He steered with his wrist so he could type faster in the search bar.
Where are we going? Ed wheezed. He called the bottle a prison. Getting out of prison is something I know a lot about. When someone gets released, they want one thing.
A woman?
No! Pen looked at Ed incredulously. That's the second thing. First comes real food. There's only one place that serves Middle Eastern cuisine in this part of Oklahoma.
Get him back in the bottle. Ed broke into a coughing fit, spattering blood across the glove box. He laid over and put his head on Penn's leg. It's not your fault if you don't save me, Pen.
Pen stroked Ed's hair. Strands came loose and clung to his fingers. He pressed the accelerator down to the floor.
The truck crashed through the front of Saffron Palace, sending patrons of the restaurant fleeing in all directions. Pen stepped out of the cab and slammed the door, pointing the bottle at Babak, who sat at his table completely unbothered by the destructive entrance.
You can get back in the bottle, or I'm going to jam it up your ass, Pen warned him.
You've worked so hard. Please, Babak gestured to the seat across from him. Join me for my first meal.
I'm not asking.
Pen sat the vessel down. You in the bottle, or the bottle in you?
Babak combed back his white hair and shook his head.
You cannot threaten me any more than a louse threatens a camel.
Pen slugged Babak square in the nose, shattering it and tipping him over in his chair.
I figured that magic lamp is like solitary confinement. The guys in solitary get soft. They can't take a punch.
Pen kicked the Ifrit in the ribs.
Now get in the fucking bong!
Babak's mustache smoldered. The bittersweet smell of opium trailed from the glowing ends as he rose to his feet. Pen backed away slowly. The threads of Babak's robe ignited, and the garment fell away from his naked body as ash.
Pen lifted a chair over his shoulder. Babak's mouth stretched open until his jaw unhinged, and continued to stretch wider still. His voice emanated from deep within him.
I am which was created before all else. From the first flame I took my life. You, child of the mud, are born in my shadow, he said.
You suck at talking shit. Pen lunged forward, swinging the chair at Babak's face. A fiery cloud launched from Babak's maw and engulfed the furniture. Pen let go and jumped back, gasping at the remains already scorched to a cinder between him and the Ifrit. The creature laughed, smoke oozed from his pores, yellow-brown perspiration dripped from the wiry hairs of his broad chest. The glow returned to his eyes, and his skin combusted. Babak clutched Penn's arms, searing his flesh and tossing him effortlessly across the restaurant. The fiery figure stalked the room, leaving burning footprints in his wake. The ceiling tiles darkened overhead. Penn crawled under a table only for a fireball to set it ablaze. He shot from beneath it and ran to the kitchen as more flaming orbs streaked past him and ignited the furnishings. Penn pulled his shirt over his head to examine his wounds. The creature's handprints were black spots of charred flesh.
Jesus, I look like a fucking whopper.
The plastic swinging doors melted into a puddle as the Ifrit pushed through them. Babak turned slowly to face Pen.
Where is your bravado now, little louse? He growled.
You know what the hardest thing about getting out of prison is? Pen asked, looking around the kitchen for a weapon. He grabbed a large curved knife and pointed it at Babak.
Enlighten me.
The Ifrit touched the point of the knife. The blade glowed intensely until the tang cooked through the handle and Pen tossed it aside with a shriek. He continued moving away from the walking inferno.
The hardest part is knowing the whole fucking world went on without you. Everyone lived their lives, moved on, and did their own thing. The creature paused and cocked its head. This is true. Everything changes when you're locked up. No one gives a shit that you're gone, and the world isn't the same when you come back. So much shit has been invented that you can't keep up. Bet you never even heard of Ansel. Penn grabbed a pot and slung the boiling oil at the Ifrit. The liquid flared to life, burning everything in its path. Secondary fires flashed around the kitchen. Bobbock's laughter boomed. He stepped toward Penn and raised an accusatory finger. A gout of flame speared outward and contorted into a flame sword that stopped inches from Penn's face. Then, the Ansel fire suppression system engaged. First came the high-pressure blast of chemicals that extinguished everything, followed by the blanket of heavy foam that knocked both combatants to the floor. Penn pushed himself up and slipped about until he got his footing. He spat the non-toxic but non-tasty foam from his mouth. Bobbock sobbed on the floor in a quivering mass beneath the white, sudsy blanket. His flesh was charred from the fire-suppressing agents. "Let's get you back in the bottle," Penn grabbed Bobbock's arm and the burnt flesh stripped away in his hands. "Ew!" The Ifrit curled into a fetal position as his cooling skin crumbled and broke away, leaving a human-shaped briquette on the floor. "Fuck!" Penn kicked the corpse and it shattered into soggy ash. "You weren't supposed to die! I need you to fix Ed!" Something stirred among the debris that used to be Bobbock's ribcage. "What the shit?" Penn knelt to inspect the movement. He dug his fingers through the slog, revealing a green, fist-sized orb stretching open within the Ifrit's body. The red poppy petals pushed through and twisted open. The petals shuddered, and the oversized flower moved shakily across the ravaged organs beneath it. Penn touched the petals. The flower twisted violently, and the four vice-like fangs buried deep into Penn's hand. He jumped back, howling in pain. The fake flower lost petals as Penn shook his arm violently, revealing the creature whose back it grew on. Its spindly legs fought for purchase as it was slung back and forth. Penn banged it against a countertop, freeing himself from its bite. At a cost, he grimaced at the exposed bone before reaching for a towel to wrap around the wound. A cowering cook ran past Penn and into the wrecked dining room. Penn ignored him and followed the monster's tracks through the foam and out the service entrance to the alley beyond. He groaned. The overhead lights left pools of piss yellow between the restaurants and the nearby buildings. "Come out, Bobbock," he called. The Ifrit did not oblige. Thin digits caressed Penn's bare shoulder and squeezed the tense muscles, sending a ripple of goosebumps up his spine as he whirled around. The creature wasn't there. Just the cook. The diminutive Iranian man glared at Penn from behind thick lenses that occupied entirely too much of his dark face. The man held up the magic bottle. "You forgot this," he said softly. "It seems to be missing the cork." "Shit, I hadn't thought of that." Penn took the bottle. The man reached into his white smock and produced a cork of his own. He held it up, showing Penn the burned-in hexagram on its wide top. "I think you'll find this one fits perfectly." The man scampered away. "The fuck am I supposed to do with the bottle?" The cook stopped at the door. "Put the Ifrit back inside. Do you know nothing?" "As a matter of fact, I don't." The cook rolled his eyes and sighed. "Ifrits don't like light. Flush it out, nail it to the earth, invoke the name of Suleiman, and return it to its vessel at once to undo any wish it is granted. It's not that difficult." The man disappeared inside and slammed the door. Penn's shoulders sagged. He put the cork between his teeth and pulled out his phone, flipping on the flashlight. "Okay, I got light and a bottle. Where do I get nails? I don't see a hardware st- Oh, motherfucker!" Penn cast the light down and found the source of the sudden pain. He lifted his foot, and with it, the broken slat of a pallet. He slid down the brick wall and pried the board loose. The rusted nails squeaked as they passed through the rubber sole of his boot. "Oh, good. Now I have nails." He panned the light around. Nothing moved. He tilted the phone under the dumpster beside him. The monster screeched and lunged from its cover, attacking the phone and knocking it to the ground. It scurried away and Penn crawled after it until he could get his feet under him and run. The thing's 10 legs carried it much faster than Penn could hobble. It cleared the alley and found itself in the glare of a streetlight. The ifrit screamed again and bolted around the building. Penn rounded the corner and searched for the thing. Then he saw the back of his truck sticking out of the side of the building. Ed was slumped against the tires, his clothes saturated with sweat, and his face void of color except for the explosion of freckles. A clump of hair blew away from his head on the breeze. Bloody spittle dripped down his chin as his body spasmed with weak hacks. Penn slid to the ground beside him. He hugged the boy and stroked his cheek. The fever was gone, but Ed's skin was deathly cold in its wake. "Come on, kid, you saved me. Stay alive long enough to let me pay you back."
It's okay," Ed moaned. "At least I'm with my friend."
Penn wept as the boy fell limp against him. The ifrit shimmied out from under the truck and stared at the two humans with its beady red eyes. Its fangs spread in a clicking hiss that sounded like perverse laughter. The monster moved forward slowly, crawling across Ed's wilted form. It watched Penn cry. But the man didn't move. Bobbik took tentacle steps onto his thigh, and then stood tall and repeated the evil cackling.
"What was it you called me, Kazam?"
Penn sniffled. He wiped his nose on the back of his hand, still clutching the broken board.
Child of the mud. Wasn't that it?"
Bobbik blinked each of his 6 eyes.
"Guess that makes me part of the earth."
The board met Penn's thigh with a sharp, wet smack. Bobbik squealed beneath the wood with nails pinning him in place. Penn pressed the board down harder and spat the cork into his free hand. He placed the hexagram against Bobbik's face. Smoke roiled at the contact of the divine symbol and infernal flesh. "In Suleiman's name, get the fuck in the bottle." The creature's flesh vibrated, shifted, and burst into a cloud of brackish smoke that swirled around the neck of the ornate glass vessel. Penn stuffed the cork into the top, sealing the ifrit within. His head thumped against the tire and he hugged Ed close.
"I'm sorry I was late, kid."
Janet adjusted the flowers in their vases. Her hands shook as much from stress and heartache as from the lack of a drink. She hadn't had a drop since Penn returned without her son. She wouldn't touch it, ever again. Ed only ever had one friend, but the flowers seemed to come from everywhere. Even some lady in New York sent some. It seemed all the time Janet spent in a bottle, her son spent, touching the lives of others. None of them were his friends. Just Penn. The rest sent cards explaining how Ed helped them, how the words and smile he shared touched them. She reread the cards and broke down in tears again. Penn placed a hand on her shoulder. She slapped it away. "I never knew what he was doing when I'd send him away," she said, holding up the cards. Penn took them and flipped through the stack. He'd read all of them several times. "Ed told me magic is just a toy, without a battery." He set the cards next to the flowers and took a bag of gummy worms from his pocket. He'd picked all the other colors out, to leave only Ed's favorite red and green ones. He put one between his teeth and slurped it up before offering them to Janet. She smiled softly and plucked one from the bag. "What's that even mean?" she asked. "Ed shared his magic with people that needed it. He got that from somewhere. Maybe you fucked up in how you showed it, but you still loved him, or you wouldn't be crying in a bag of gummy worms with me. That was the battery to his magic. Love." "They still don't know what happened?" Janet said.
"Severe allergic reaction," a small Middle Eastern man said from behind oversized glasses. He stepped into the room and slapped the iPad against his palm. "Possibly something found in the second-hand moving blankets inside Mr. Pennington's truck."
"Pennington?" Janet glanced up at Penn. Penn pointed at the man.
"You're the cook!"
"Obviously not, since I am clearly the doctor," he nodded happily. "And you are Casper Marion Pennington, are you not?"
"Wow, your parents hated you," Janet said.
"Yeah," Penn pinched the bridge of his nose. "I am."
"You should be more careful of the things you allow a boy to play with,"
the doctor scolded him. Ed turned away from the harsh glare of the overhead fluorescence with a groan.
"Mom? Penn?"
"About damn time you woke up, kid," Penn rubbed Ed's shaved head. How are you feeling?
Like I was in a car crash.
The doctor cleared his throat. Penn squinted at him, then turned his attention back to Ed. Janet shoved him out of the way and snuggled her son. Penn sat on the corner of the bed and dug in his pockets with a groan. The skin grafts were tight and pinched. Ed pushed his mother's hair out of his face.
Mom, you're smothering me.
I'm sorry, baby. She kissed his cheek. For so much. Penn put his hand on her shoulder again, and this time, she let it stay.
Good thing you woke up when you did, Penn said.
Why's that? Ed asked as excitedly as the recently resuscitated could.
Because you almost missed the coolest, most fun holiday there is.
He handed Ed a narrow box with a ribbon around it. Ed opened the box and smiled, holding up the prize inside.
I can't believe I forgot. That's right, kid. It's National Kazoo Day.
The end.
Come on. Come on, admit it. That one got to you a little bit, didn't it? That one got you a little bit. It got me a little bit while I was reading it and recording it. You got a little tear in your eye, didn't you, when you thought that bratty kid was dead? Well, so did I. And for those who have been listening for a while, you may recognize that Penn and Ed are from episode 38, The Worm Has Turned. So, if you're a newer listener, now is the best time to go back and listen to episode 38, and you can kind of get the beginnings of Penn and Ed. Now, on Weekly Spooky, we don't do a lot of multi-part stories, but we do have some characters that all exist in the same universe, and it keeps it fun. David O'Hanlon has a little bit of his own universe. Rob Fields has the Strickfield universe, which is really awesome, and I think maybe next week we're going to go back to Strickfield, by the way, but we'll just have to wait and see till next time. So I hope you enjoyed that story as much as I did. And real quick, I want to say thank you so much to our Patreon backers. You guys do not know just what a difference you make allowing me to keep making this show, especially during the time of the global pandemic and all that crap. But I really do appreciate the support. It makes a huge difference. And I appreciate those of you who go to weeklyspooky.com and just drop a tip in. A dollar is incredibly appreciated just to allow us to keep doing the show. It allows me to take my time and spend it talking into a microphone and collaborating with incredibly talented authors. And I want to take a moment to thank our Patreon podcast boosters, those who have contributed just to have their names read on the show. We have Karen Wemet, Jeff and George Hilton, Craig Cohen, Rob Fields, and Kevin Fry. Thank you all so much, and thank you to the rest of our Patreon backers. You guys are amazing, and I can't tell you how much I enjoy doing the show. Man, we are inching our way closer and closer to episode 100, by the way. What are we going to do about episode 100? How do we make it special? Send me an email at weeklyspooky@gmail.com and tell me what you think we should do. But anyway, my friends, I'm going to get out of here. So for our producer, Dan Wilder, for our composer, Ray Madison, for myself, please stay safe, but also stay scared, and I will talk at you later.
Thank you for listening. Make sure to find your way back next week. But for now, you are safe. Trust me.